You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
One down, three to go. On that note, welcome in to another episode of Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's winningest team. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. What a fun Sunday afternoon it was for the Rockets at Toyota Center, 110-96 winners over the Jazz in Game 1 of the best-of-seven second-round series. Game 2 Wednesday night, also at Toyota Center, Rockets will have an opportunity to go up 2-0. The Rockets have now beaten the Jazz all 5 times they've played this season, and, well, the only way the Rockets don't advance to the conference finals is if the Jazz take 4 out of the next 6, which, while not impossible, certainly it's a very daunting task. As far as today's game, so many things went right. James Harden, he was in peak MVP form, 41 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, 12 of 26 from the field, 7 of 12 from 3. Clint Capella was dominant inside, 16 points, 12 rebounds. He actually outscored and out-rebounded Rudy Gobert, who had 11 and 9. Just a tremendous playoff run for Clint so far, even going up against Karl-Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert. He's been better than both of those guys through 6 games. The Rockets collectively, as a team, shot 17 of 32, over 50% from behind the arc, which is their best game of the entire postseason thus far shooting the ball. Even Chris Paul, if there's one kind of nitpick you could make at Game 5, the closeout against Minnesota, it was that Chris shot 0 of 8 from 3. Well, he was 50%, 3 of 6 in Game 1. So if you had any concerns about Chris, and I certainly did not, well, I think he alleviated those with a very strong performance. Again, making 50% of his threes, 17 points, 6 boards, 4 rebounds. Rockets overall cruising. If there's one nitpick, they did have 14 turnovers, 7 of those from Chris, but a lot of those happened in the second half. The Rockets get out to a 27-point lead before the halftime break, and then I thought in the second half there was a little bit of taking the foot off the gas, which the Rockets acknowledged after the game, and it is a problem. Great teams don't play the scoreboard, they play themselves, and I think it's only healthy that the Rockets are focusing on what they did wrong in the second half, why they just won by 14 relative to, you know, 25 or even 35. But the bottom line, the Rockets were in cruise control throughout. The Jazz, there are some understandable reasons why they lost this game. No Ricky Rubio with a hamstring injury. That was expected. Also, the Jazz coming off a grueling round one series with the Thunder. That didn't finish off until after midnight Houston time Friday night. Then they had to have a very quick turnaround, especially by playoff standards, to get to Houston for a game that started by their body clocks at 1:30 Sunday afternoon. So the Jazz, I don't know if they were fully engaged, and I think they're likely to be better as this series moves along, but I don't care who you're playing. To be up by 27 points in a playoff game before the break and to shoot over 50% from three, that's incredible what the Rockets showed you, and that's why, to me, I view it as probably, I would say, their most standout performance thus far, because with Minnesota, they started off slow shooting the ball, but ultimately throughout the series, especially Game 4 and Game 5, they got where they wanted to offensively. They eventually made a ton of threes, over 40%, and outside of Chris Paul, they were at 50% in Game 5, but you always had to wonder, was it the Minnesota defense? Minnesota's not a good defensive team, and while Minnesota on some levels could pose you problems offensively, especially with Jimmy Butler back, there's a reason that Minnesota with Butler was on a pace to win 51-plus games, and I think they showed it to you at times that series. The question was always what the Rockets are doing offensively. Was it so much the Minnesota defense, or was it the Rockets actually knocking off the rust? And I think they showed you Sunday that, yes, they have knocked off that rust. It was a little bit weird for the Rockets going into the playoffs because the last 2 weeks of the year they'd had such little to play for, and they believed they would turn around. Statistically, they did. There were some questions until Sunday when you were playing the second-ranked defense in the entire NBA in the Jazz, anchored by Rudy Gobert. How much was the opponent versus how much was you figuring it out? Well, going up 64-39 at the break, it shows you that, yes, the Rockets figured some things out themselves as well. Also, defensively, in that first half, limiting the Jazz to just 39 points. Donovan Mitchell, he was great, but even by his standards, 21 points on 22 shots, that's not nearly as efficient as what we saw him do against the Jazz. Now, collectively, Utah did shoot 50% overall from the field, 32% from three, which is pretty solid. But again, a lot of those came in garbage time. The Jazz did put up 57 in the second half, but a lot of that was when the Rockets, admittedly, were not keeping their foot on the gas, which it's something they need to clean up. But if your problem is how exactly you play with a 25-point lead, generally you're going to be fine. And for the Rockets in this game, both sides of the floor, we actually heard afterward Mitchell giving a ton of credit to Trevor Ariza, his length, his IQ defensively, and coming off a series in which they play the Thunder team. I don't know if the Thunder are great defensively, so the numbers show them to be in the middle of the pack, but between Paul George, Steven Adams, they do have some guys that individually can be very disruptive. For the Jazz to give that kind of credit to the Rockets and to see Houston defend that well, especially in the first half, keeping them below 40 points, it was a dominant performance on both ends of the court. Now, Harden in particular, he led the way. He's the MVP frontrunner for a reason, and 47 points on 7 of 12 from 3. He was actually 5 of 8 on step-back threes. The Jazz actually guarded him well, and he still made those. Also got to the line 11 times, made 10 of those, had 7 assists in there, 8 rebounds, had a team-best plus-minus of plus 15. When James Harden is in that form, the Rockets are almost unbeatable, and that was what stood out on Sunday. And I think it's especially important because, of course, James was brilliant. I think also there's a very good observation from Royce Young of ESPN. A lot of you guys know him as a Thunder guy because he's based out of Oklahoma City, and for most of his career, he's covered the Thunder. But he had an observation after watching the Thunder play the Jazz for the 6-game first-round series. The Jazz won 4-2, that Harden's ability in that 5-7-foot range separated him from Westbrook, especially in this matchup. And the Rockets here, yeah, they made a lot of threes, but they also, especially early in the game, both James and Chris made a handful of mid-range shots, teardrops. They're actually 8 of 9, I saw, within 3 feet of the bucket against Gobert. I think it was maybe the first game of the playoffs that Gobert did not have a block. And I think it shows you that the Rockets, they're multidimensional. Yes, they shoot threes, but they have enough creativity, especially on the drive. Eric Gordon, we'll discuss him in the third segment because he was certainly a low light, 7 points, but 0 of 6 from the field. But even Eric, he got to the line 9 times, made 7 of those, had 4 assists. The Rockets, between Chris, James, and Eric, they've got creativity off the dribble. And even against a Jazz team that is very stout, anchored by Gobert and Favors inside, the Rockets showed an ability to finish. And, of course, on the switches, when Gobert or Favors got isolated one-on-one against James or Chris, it was good night. The Rockets did what they do with James Harden and Chris Paul, two top 10 players in the league. And collectively, this game, they combined, you guys know I like to add up their stats, 58 points, 13 assists, 12 rebounds on nearly 50% from the field and above 50% from three-point range. And I'm sure they'll point to the 10 turnovers. They could clean some things up. But again, a lot of those happened in the second half, and the Rockets were up very, very comfortably. By and large, the Rockets dominated this game, not just shooting the ball, but inside the ball, even inside the rim, excuse me, even attacking Rudy Gobert. The guards did well. You mentioned Clint Capella. And ultimately, a Utah team, yes, they're going to get better throughout the series, especially if they get Rubio back, and certainly they'll make adjustments between now and Wednesday. They'll be more rested. All of these things are true. Nonetheless, I don't care who the opponent is, for the Rockets to show you what they did on Sunday, less than 24 hours after what Golden State did against New Orleans on Saturday night, psychologically, that's a big deal. Because I don't think the Rockets are immune to what we've all seen on NBA Twitter and all the social media networks, all the commentary about what happened in Game 1 of the Pelicans-Warriors series, when the Warriors show that extra gear, they're up by 20-plus at the half and coasted to a relative blowout win, 123-101. And I'm sure they heard a lot of talk about inevitability. The Warriors, they turned it on. It's the playoffs. The struggles down the stretch of the year when they went 7-10 in their last 17 were just an aberration because they weren't taking it seriously. Yes, the Warriors are really, really good. They've won the West the last 3 years. They've won the title 2 of the past 3. Now they have Kevin Durant on top of the original core. Steph Curry's probably going to be back in Game 2. Yada, yada, yada. The Rockets are really good. And even if the Rockets are fully healthy, they did get Luke Bamute back today. Beating the Warriors is probably a 50-50 task, a 50-50 proposition at best. That's how good Golden State is. You tip your hat to them. However, it is absolutely not an inevitability for Golden State as well. While Golden State, yeah, they've got that extra gear, so do the Rockets. And the Rockets against the Jazz, they reminded you why they won 65 games this year. Yes, Golden State is really, really good, and they are better than pretty much everyone from 3 through 8, and of course, below in the Western Conference. Well, guess what? So are the Rockets. There's a reason why the Jazz, even at 48-34, and they were just dominant the last 2 to 3 months of the season, the Rockets looked in another league than them on Sunday. And it's not just Sunday. It's not just the tired legs. As I mentioned earlier on, the Rockets are now 5-0 against the Jazz this season. So no, this is not a one-off. The Rockets showed you on Sunday exactly what Golden State showed you on Saturday. And I know there's a rush to judgment on a lot of NBA circles because the Warriors' dominance the last few years is a bit demoralizing because of how big the talent advantage is, how hard it is for other teams to compete with. And I understand that on some level. But we have enough data on the Rockets now, 65-17 through the regular season, now 5-1 in the playoffs against two very good teams in Minnesota and Utah. The Rockets, their A game is really, really good as well. Is it as great as the Warriors? We'll probably get a chance to find out in just a couple weeks. But before rushing to judgment on either side of the equation, let's let this thing play out. And ultimately, I think it was big for the Rockets because I'm sure they heard the noise to respond the very next day and remind themselves, the league, that, hey, the Rockets, when they're clicking, the Houston A game is really, really good too. It doesn't give you any guarantee of success. Golden State is still really, really good. But the Rockets, when they play their game, and they've done that, I know game one of the first round was a little dicey, but the last three wins of the first round, they won by 18, 19, and 20 points. This one, game one of the second round, they were up by 27 before the break. The Rockets, they're not just winning games, they are crushing playoff opponents at home, on the road. There's going to be a bigger challenge Wednesday. I think the Jazz, Quinn Snyder's a great coach. They're going to be rested. They're going to have time to make adjustments, and I'm sure they'll do all of that. But the Rockets, what they showed you Sunday is that their A game, it can compete with anyone, Golden State included. And so to do that in the context of what Golden State showed you just a night before, I know the Rockets aren't playing the Warriors right now, but this season has always been about the Rockets catching the Warriors. Are they at that level? And after Golden State made quite a statement on Saturday night, winning by 20-plus against a Pelicans team that looked very good in round one, sweeping the Blazers, I thought the Rockets made quite a statement on Sunday in blowing out a Jazz team that beat Oklahoma City in round one, that by the stats was the best team in the league over the past two and a half months, the final of the regular season, one that beat the Warriors by 19, 30, and 40 three times in the final 2.5 months of the regular season. This Jazz team can absolutely play. We saw what Donovan Mitchell could do even against a Thunder team that, as I mentioned, has lots of dynamic individual defenders, and the Rockets both ends of the floor, especially when the game was there to be won in the first half. They showed you that a Utah team that I respect greatly, they were no match for Houston, and again, not just a one-off, they're now 0-5 against the Rockets this year. So tip your hat to the Warriors. They're really, really good. But you know what? The Rockets, led by James Harden and Chris Paul, combined 58, 13, and 12 in this game. They're really, really good as well. Now, I wanted to lead the first segment talking about the Rockets' A game because, in my opinion, it's very important to talk about upside. The three-point shooting, for example, you can point out, and I'm sure some have, in fact, I know they have, reading my Twitter timeline, that the Rockets, the first three games against Minnesota, were below 30% a lot, especially the key guys, Ariza, Tucker, Gordon. And by the way, while Gordon struggled, I mentioned that earlier, Trevor and PJ were a combined 5 of 9. They stayed hot after shooting about 50% in Game 5 against Minnesota. And I'm sure you're going to say, well, you'd like to even out the volatility. Well, when you're talking about threes, there's always going to be a lot of volatility. It just comes with the inherent nature of the shot. You're not really going to have a team that shoots 40% every game from three. But even if theoretically you could control it from the standpoint of being more consistent from behind the arc, in this era of the Warriors, I think you want the volatility. You want your peaks to be what they've been in the last couple of games, the Minnesota series, and this first one in which the Rockets shot, what, 17 of 32, 53% from behind the arc. Now, in this one, the Rockets didn't quite get their normal volume of threes, but the looks they got, they were in rhythm. They made them. Tip your hat. And so if you're going to complain about, and I know a lot of you did in the first three games of the Minnesota series, when it doesn't go your way, even if you're going to say, well, statistics say that it should even out, there should be a regression, yada, yada, if you're going to complain when things don't go your way, then you better celebrate it when they do. And I think you should especially celebrate it in this modern NBA with the Warriors, because your ability to do that, even against a top-notch defense in Utah that actually limited you to 32 attempts. So they did a pretty good job of not letting you get exactly the style that you want to play. And for the Rockets to actually make over 53% of their shots in spite of all that, again, it ties into your A game, which is a big part of not just this series, but where the Rockets want to go overall, which is not just winning the 5 playoff games they've done to this point, but winning 16 and actually winning the NBA title for the first time since the mid-90s. So I want to talk about the shooting and the guards to lead off, because certainly I think they were the flashiest story. But under the radar, another big one was Clint Capella. 36 minutes against Rudy Gobert, 16 points, 12 rebounds, a block, 7 of 13 from the field. Gobert, he played 35 minutes, made all 4 of his shots. Clint had more points, 16 to 11. He had more rebounds, 12 to 9. He had more blocks, 1 to 0. Clint, this playoff run in 6 games against Karl-Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert, these are 2 of the most talented big men in the league. And Clint has more than held his own. He has outplayed them. Now, it's 1 game. Gobert will get to rest before Wednesday. We'll see what adjustments they make. All of that is true. But all we can discuss at this point are the data that's there. And right now, Clint Capella, through 6 games against elite competition, has been the best center in any of these matchups. The Rockets versus Minnesota, the Rockets versus Utah. That is big time in terms of offense, in terms of defense, held the Jazz below 100 points, and his rim protection. It's so important. I mentioned the rim protection a lot, but because the Rockets switch on everything, that gives the Jazz a lot of problems, perhaps especially without Rubio, but we saw it in the Oklahoma City series when things got hairy for the Jazz offensively, the end of Game 5 and a lot of Game 6. The Thunder were able to switch everything. Houston is able to do that, and then some. They switch more than anybody in the league, and a big part of that is because Capella is athletic enough to hold his own on the perimeter against guards. You can't cook Capella the same way that James Harden and Chris Paul are able to cook Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors. Now, to some degree, that's also James Harden and Chris Paul are better creators than anyone, even Donovan Mitchell, on the Jazz. But regardless, Clint Capella as a big, his ability not just to defend the rim, but to defend in space, that's a big deal. But overall, Towns and Gobert have different styles, but Capella's ability to adapt, his ability to affect play on both ends, his ability to stay out of foul trouble, even against Gobert and all the size, Capella had just 2 fouls in 36 minutes. And then there's the 36 minutes. Last year, everyone wondered about the stamina. Can he play more than 25 a game? Now he's at 36. The only guy who played more minutes for the Rockets was Harden with 37. So that dimension from Clint Capella in the middle, combined with what you're getting from James Harden and Chris Paul, what we discussed in the first segment, the threes, they made over 50%. Those two, and then the Rockets as a team, 53. The ability to attack and finish inside, the ability now with Chris to hit the mid-range shot, Harden having the type of teardrop game that even Russell Westbrook doesn't. All those things are great, but to be truly elite, you can't just be a perimeter team, you can't just be about the shooters, you've got to have that interior element as well. That's what Clint Capella has given you, and it kind of slid beneath the radar in what otherwise felt like an explosive game, and because of how well you shot from three and how just otherworldly Harden, the league's MVP frontrunner for a reason, 41, 8 and 7 in his game-high 37 minutes, 7 or 12 from three. But Capella's ability to protect the rim, and then you combine that with the denial on the wings from P.J. Tucker, Trevor Ariza continuing to do what they do, Luke Bamute off the bench, 21 minutes in his return. That's a big part of why the Rockets, offensively, they're dominant with the threes, but then defensively, they can shut you down as well, especially in the key moments, which in this game were the first half when the Rockets raced out to that 27-point lead, and at that point, everything else was effectively garbage time. The Jazz did do some things better in the second half, but it's hard for me to say what was the Jazz thoroughly making adjustments and what was the Rockets just understandably taking the foot off the gas a little bit with a big lead. We'll have to wait and see Game 2 Wednesday night exactly what falls into which category. But Capella, I thought he built off a big-time first round against Karl-Anthony Towns, and he continued to grow off of that performance. Last year in the playoffs, it was uneven. We know what he fared fairly well in the second round against the Spurs, but against the Thunder, outplayed by Steven Adams, and there were always stamina questions this year, and of course, he's about to get paid in the offseason. Fortunately, we heard from owner Tillman Fertitta after Game 5. I mean, there's going to be a hit to the Rockets' pocketbook. They're certainly willing to do that. They understand how good Clint Capella is, but regardless of the matchup, regardless of the pace, regardless of offense versus defense, Clint has been there, and while the guards, the three-point shooting is always going to be flashier, Clint has been massive, and it's why I said in the Minnesota series, it's not just a big two, it's not just James Harden and Chris Paul. It's a big three. Clint Capella he's right in there as well, and he is legitimately playing at an all-star level right now. Off the bench, it was interesting to see what the Rockets are going to do behind Clint. Now, fortunately, Clint plays well enough and is able to go long enough, mentioned 36 minutes, that there's actually not that many other minutes at the center spot. But Nene played just 4 minutes. I actually thought he went, Nene in his 4 minutes had a couple of blocks. I thought he looked pretty good in the first half. Two boards, two blocks. I thought he moved the ball well. But in the second half, the Rockets with that big lead, they actually didn't bring Nene back out there. They played Ryan Anderson at the five. I actually didn't think those minutes went all that well. I discussed with David Locke, the Jazz radio voice, on our preview show. If you haven't listened to that, I think a lot of those points are still very valid. We recorded that Saturday afternoon when the Jazz were flying down to Houston. But I thought in the second half, you saw Ryan Anderson taking some of those 5 minutes instead of Nene, Rockets experimenting, trying to see how exactly that went. Ultimately, I thought the Rockets were better with Nene out there than they were with Ryan Anderson, but that's going to be the thing to watch throughout this series. At least in round, or game one, I should say, the small ball that worked at times in the regular season, that wasn't really how the Rockets had success. It was more that they matched power with power. Clint Capella and Nene, whichever traditional center the Rockets had in, they generally matched the Jazz in intensity and physicality at the rim, and they made enough shots on the perimeter. They didn't get necessarily the normal quantity of looks from three with 32, but if you're making 17, that's enough shooting to where maybe you're just better off with the brute physicality and matching power with power, Gobert in favors against the likes of Nene and Clint Capella. Now, maybe if you're not making your threes as much, maybe that's when you put in the Ryan Anderson lineups or the Tuck Wagon. We mentioned that a lot, the potential for that in our preview show with David. They also did that a lot in the regular season against Utah. Perhaps that ends up necessary as the series moves along. It did not in game one, but part of that, this game is kind of weird, especially in the second half, to take much out of with the Rockets and really the entire gym at Toyota Center being a little bit dead with the Rockets having put on such a show in the first half and getting out to such a big lead. But I would say that's about the only nitpick that you could have in terms of the Rockets' interior presence. Really, in this game, as good as they were in the perimeter in terms of James Harden, Chris Paul, outside of the turnovers and being a little undisciplined in the second half, those two were so good. They made 53% from three. They were also really, really good inside as well. And, well, it all ties back into what we said in the initial segment, which is, of course, the A game of the Rockets, not just on the perimeter, but inside as well. It's as good as any team in the league. Yes, despite what NBA Twitter might tell you, including the Golden State Warriors. Now, all that said, this was not a perfect game for the Rockets. And I think that's important to note. Eric Gordon, now I mentioned he was springy. He got to the line 9 times, made 7 of those, had 4 assists. So his bounce was useful off the bench, especially the minutes without James Harden. Rockets had to have some kind of creativity. But from the field, just 0 of 6, only got 2 threes. I think the Jazz did a much better job closing off on him than Minnesota did. And by and large, it's been a disappointing playoff run thus far for Eric. It has not been, I would say, a bad week. Because Game 4 and Game 5, let's keep in mind, he averaged 18.5 points a game on over 40% shooting from behind the arc. So it's not like he's just cold. He was in rhythm. It's a combination, I think, just a random bad night. And also the things that the Jazz did defensively to him, he's going to have to adjust. But overall, Eric, a guy who at times can be a legitimate 20-plus points per game scorer in this league, going 0 of 6, it was not a good night for him. Luke Bamute, he made his first three, but ultimately in 21 minutes, made just 1 of his 5 shots, had 4 fouls. It's what you would expect from a guy who hadn't played in 3 weeks. Also, I thought he was a little tentative. Now, not that you wanted to go out there dunking, because that's how you're asking to redislocate that shoulder, which has already been dislocated twice this year, and how it exposes him to more contact. That's what happened on the second dislocation, the Lakers game, about, 19 days ago? So I understand there's going to be some limits, but even by Luke's standards, I thought there were moments where he went inside, he didn't finish with the usual vigor that he usually does and took some awkward angles. I think it's a combination of rust, and also the more he plays without re-injuring that shoulder, the more he's going to start trusting again. But those two off the bench, they're the only guys the Rockets even played in double figures minutes off the bench. Ryan Anderson played 9, Nene played 4, Gerald Green barely played at all, just had 1 minute in garbage time. Now, I'm sure some of you will say, if Eric Gordon is struggling so much, or Luke is, why not trust Gerald? Look, there might be a circumstance for that, especially if the Rockets are losing in a game, that maybe that margin leads you to do some desperate things. But by and large, we have a large sample size that Eric Gordon and Luke Bamute are better basketball players than Gerald Green. And as the playoff moves along, the rotation is going to tighten. Not saying there's no role for Eric, but when things are moving as well as they were in this one, I don't really think that's the time to experiment. Now, really, if there's one guy I think you could point to that maybe Gerald gets some time ahead of, it might be Ryan Anderson, because if Nene is going to play as well as he has, and I've been on the record, I think Nene in the playoffs has been better than what the Rockets and even Mike D'Antoni maybe expected, then ultimately, if Ryan Anderson is not a five, if he's only a four, we know what his defensive limitations are. If he's not able to fire off the shots, or if he's a little hesitant, I thought it was a combination of both in this game, then maybe you play a little bit smaller, but with the extra flexibility, versatility of Gerald, maybe that's where Gerald can get minutes. I don't think it's Eric versus Luke. In this game, I think kind of micromanaging and taking out the microscope for the bench minutes in the game you were so comfortably ahead throughout, I think it's just a waste and effort. We can discuss that more the next time the Rockets have a game that's actually competitive. Just want to address it because I'm sure some on Rockets Twitter are saying, especially after Gerald came in and didn't make a three in his 1 minute, well, why wasn't he out there, especially with Eric going out there and going 0 of 6, Luke 1 of 5, those two guys, the only guys that played double-figure minutes off the bench, a combined 1 of 11. And look, in Eric's case, I think just a bad game. Where the last two games he played, again, over 18 points a game on above 40% shooting from behind the arc. So he's been really good of late. He's been great this year. Luke, we know the value he gives you defensively. I thought in this game, actually, defensively, looked pretty good. I thought the rust was as you would expect it. Offensively, and especially in situations where he might take a little bit of contact on that shoulder, that's completely understandable. The only way he's going to knock that rust off is to keep playing and also to build more confidence in that shoulder with each game he goes out there and doesn't re-injure it. So ultimately, Eric can be better. Luke can be better. And I think it's important to note that because my sense is that the narrative the next couple of days is going to be, and part of it because neutral fans, they want to believe that every series can be competitive. It's better for the game. I understand that. And superficially, you can make the argument that, look, the Rockets, they were rested. The Jazz, they didn't have Rubio. They had an incredibly short turnaround time. They were fatigued. They had a grueling round one series against the Jazz. And the Rockets shot above 50% from three. Well, eventually, the Rockets aren't going to be that hot from three. The Jazz are going to be more rested. And some will even say, well, the Rockets only won by 14 points. But again, as I said at the beginning, I think the final margin's misleading because this game was over by halftime. So I think there's a limit to exactly how much you can take in terms of the final margin because I don't think those minutes in the second half were the same as minutes either side would have played if the game was actually competitive. The Jazz never, not even once, got it to single digits in the second half of this game. So I think it's easy to push back on the final margin part. But the others, there's some truth to it. I don't think it's everything, but the Rockets, they're not going to shoot that well from three. Now, maybe they can offset that by getting a higher volume. Maybe that's some of the small ball strategies we talked about. The Rockets didn't need to employ them in this one. Maybe they feel like they do. If they're not hitting as many in the future, we'll see what they do. The Jazz are certainly going to make adjustments. They're going to be more rested. Maybe later in the series, they get Rubio back. So far, it looks like 7 to 10 days, they'll reevaluate. If the Rockets go down, or if the Jazz go down 2-0, maybe they expedite that a little bit. Have to wait and see. Series shifts back to Utah starting game three on Friday night. All of those things are true. But the Rockets did not play a perfect game themselves. Again, they were up by 27. I think they took the foot off the gas, which they admit in the second half. They could be better in the terms of the overall defensive intensity. But beyond that, even if you miss a few more threes, what if Eric Gordon is the guy who scored nearly 20 points per game the final two against Minnesota on above 40% from behind the arc? The same guy we saw all year long be a dynamic, the reigning sixth man of the year off that bench. What if Luke Bamute continues to knock the rust off and gets better and isn't shooting just 20%, missing his final four shots with four fouls in 20 minutes? What happens when he gets back closer to the guy he's been all season long? What happens if Ryan Anderson has a game in like game three against Minnesota when he was 4 of 6 from behind the arc? Or Gerald Green does what he can do even on short notice in the playoffs. The Rockets had almost nothing from their bench tonight, and that's okay because they didn't really need it. But it's important to point out that even if Trevor Ariza and PJ Tucker don't shoot above 50% from three, even if Chris Paul and James Harden don't shoot above 50% from three, well, what if they don't turn the ball over 10 times? We came off a 5-game series against Minnesota in which the Rockets' 42 turnovers, the second lowest in the history of the league in terms of turnovers in a 5-game series. They had just 4 collectively in Game 5, the closeout. The Rockets took care of the ball extremely well. Now, some of it, you give credit to the Jazz. They're a good defensive team. But other parts? The Rockets just got a little sloppy with a big lead, and that stuff happens. So even if you have a regression from three, if you bring the same intensity defensively, and the Rockets have largely done that with the exception of Game 3 in Minnesota for the entire playoff run, which is now 5 of 6 games, if they bring the same effort defensively up and down the roster, if you get better performances off your bench, Eric Gordon going back to how he finished out the Minnesota series, Luke Baumute continuing to knock the rust off and getting back to who he was throughout the regular season, Chris Paul and James Harden taking better care of the ball, even if your three-point percentage tails off from 53% to somewhere, say, 35, give or take, a few percentage points, you're still going to be okay. And that, to me, it's not that I'm trying to, when I point out these flaws, say that I'm pessimistic on the Rockets, because I'm not. I'm actually pointing out the flaws because I feel like the next couple of days, you're going to have folks acting like that the Rockets played their A-plus game. What's going to happen when the Jazz match it? In reality, I thought the Rockets were good, but I'd call it an A-minus or a B-plus game. The Rockets can be even better than that, and they know it. That's why they're actually a little frustrated in terms of how they finished the game afterward. So even if there's a regression from three, and yes, that's probably going to happen, most likely in Game 2, and if for some reason it doesn't, certainly at some point in this series, the Rockets are not going to make above 50% for at least 4 games in a playoff series. That's just the reality. But the Rockets do have other things they can clean up to where even if there is a regression, they're still going to be okay. That's because they are that good. The A game for the Rockets, when they approach it, the Jazz, as good as they are, the weak side of their team, which is them on the offensive side of the ball, second-ranked defense, 16th-ranked offense in terms of efficiency, it's not as good as the Rockets' weakness. And I say the weakness in air quotes because the Rockets are the season number 1 offense, number 6 defense, and they're even better than that top 5 defense when they have their full cast of players, which they now do with the return of Luke Baumute. Fortunately, did not re-injure the shoulder at the end of the day. Rust is to be expected. The key is to make sure he comes out healthy. He did. And so the Rockets combine a full rotation with playoff intensity, and yeah, they're not just great offensively, they're engaged and electric defensively as well. And so the Rockets, even if they don't hit the threes they did in Sunday's Game 1, they should still be just fine, especially in this matchup. Now, what does it mean for Golden State? We'll have to wait and see. That's a couple weeks away, assuming both teams advance. It seems highly likely because it's hard for me to fathom either side, the Rockets or Warriors, getting beat 4 times in the next 6. They've proven the class of the Western Conference all season long, and so seeing either lose 4 out of 6 with home court advantage with Game 5 and Game 7 favoring both the Rockets and the Warriors in their gyms, it's a long shot, and there's no guarantees in that matchup. But for now, this round, the Rockets, there's just higher upside to them than there is the Jazz, and even if the Rockets aren't quite as efficient from behind the arc as they were in Game 1, there's other areas they can make up for that. The Rockets are just the better team. That's why they've beaten the Jazz 5 times this season in 5 tries. And while I can't tell you 100% that they're better than the Warriors in the playoff series, what I can tell you is that they have every opportunity to compete. And as dominant as the Warriors were on Saturday night against New Orleans, the Rockets were that dominant on Sunday against Utah. And to me, that's enough to leave me feeling good after 6 playoff games, the Rockets, of course, having won 5 of them, now up 1 game to none in the second round. So with that, I will wrap up today's show. It's been a busy weekend for us here at Locked On Rockets. Hopefully you all have enjoyed it. Again, if you want more from the Utah side of the fence, I strongly encourage you to listen to yesterday's show, our preview with David Locke, the radio play-by-play broadcaster. He's got great perspective from the Jazz side of the fence. So if you're not already following him at Locked On Sports on Twitter or at his website, lockedonjazz.net, I strongly encourage you to do that. As for me, you can find all my work at LockedOnRockets.com. And, of course, here in the podcast, Locked On Rockets. Follow it on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. Follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose and other outlets for the show. Facebook at Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. Email LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Mention the LockedOnRockets.com website. Always, you can interact with me, access our content covering this series, or ask questions if you got things you want to know about the team, suggestions for the show, inquiries about how to reach our very highly engaged and growing audience of diehard Rockets fans. I would absolutely love to hear from you, be it as a fan, a business person, whatever it may be. Don't hesitate to reach out. We want to make this the best daily podcast it can be. And, well, right now, the only daily podcast covering this great Houston Rockets team, which after going 65-17 in the regular season, is now 5-1 in the postseason, including the 1-game-to-none lead over the Jazz in Round 2 following Sunday's 110 96 victory. Also, I mentioned David's show, Locked In Jazz. We've also got a great network across the NBA and NFL, even a few MLB, that includes the NFL's Houston Texans, who just wrapped up their draft. So if you want to know what's going on the Texans side of the fence here in Houston sports, it's a great time to be a Houston sports fan, by the way. Astros got another series win this weekend, continue to lead the AL West. If you want to hear about the Texans and their draft, check out Locked On Texans. That's hosted by my friends Robert Land and Brian Patterson. And you can find them same place you should listen to Locked On Rockets or Locked On Jazz. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, wherever you listen to your podcast, just search for Locked On, whatever the team may be. Subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, and that's how we're able to bring you content every day. You'll get an immediate download. And that's also how we remain financially viable to advertisers who want to be involved in what we're doing as really the only daily network of podcasts covering teams across the NBA, NFL, and now, as I mentioned, expanding into MLB as well. One final time, the happy final from Toyota Center Sunday, Rockets 110, Jazz 96. Rockets take the 1-0 lead in the best-of-seven series. Game 2, Wednesday night, also at Toyota Center. Rockets have an opportunity to take a commanding 2-0 lead. We'll be talking more in between then, but for now, hopefully you guys enjoy what's left of your weekend and your start to the week. And thanks again for listening to me here at Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's winningest team.